This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to Health and Living with me, Lim Soo Ann. You're listening to NCD Chronicles, a series where we go beyond the disease diagnosis to look at the lived experiences and the real challenges faced by people who have non-communicable diseases. Malaysia is no stranger to dealing with obesity, as we've been known as the fattest nation in Southeast Asia. According to the latest National Health and Morbidity Survey, about half of Malaysians are either overweight or obese. So why are we struggling to tackle this public health issue? Are we adequately addressing the needs and struggles of people who are overweight or obese? Are we even listening to them? On today's episode, we'll be hearing from Syed Amirul Ashraf on his own struggles with his weight, as well as what he saw his father go through.
My name is Amirul. I'm 34 years old. I was doing a few startup projects, but now I'm in between jobs. I come from a family with a history of obesity. My dad has had a few heart attacks. He survived at least three. And I would say that adding to my family history, I've also been struggling with obesity for as long as I could think. Like, I was a rather chubby boy and I was overweight teen. I think sometime when I was in Form 5, I did lose some weight because of scholastic activities and all of that. But I think as my life got busier during college, I think I fell back onto bad habits, bad dietary habits, lived a rather sedentary lifestyle, which was exacerbated when I started my career.
From a medical perspective, being overweight and obese is defined by having abnormal or excessive fat accumulation in your body. You're considered overweight when your body mass index, or BMI, is over 25 and obese when it's over 30. So the solution is just make lifestyle changes, eat better, exercise more to lose that excess weight, right? That's easier said than done. For Amirul, as he grew up, he saw firsthand how life can get in the way of trying to lead a healthier lifestyle.
It was traumatizing for one. I think that the second heart attack he had, I was probably about 10 years old. We just had dinner, and I remembered that dinner was a large serving of chicken rice. And he went outside after dinner. He had a smoke, and then he started complaining of chest pain. And everyone assumed the worst and sent him immediately to the hospital. That journey to recovery was something that all of us as family members, my mom, I remembered, and my brothers, consciously went through the process of starting to eat healthier along with him. But the fact of the matter is, as busy working adults, there are a few other factors. Because he had to make ends meet, he had to take up two jobs, which severely limited his time to take care of his fitness, to work out. And any time that he had left after working those two jobs were focused on spending time with the family members. And my mom also was working. And that affected the kind of meals that she had time to prepare, which in turn affected the kind of food that we eat for lunch, breakfast, or dinner. Specifically, I remembered having to eat a lot of instant noodles, mm-hmm. just because nobody had the time to prepare a nutritious, healthy breakfast.
Time and money. These are two aspects that significantly impact how someone is able to make better decisions for their health. While we are seeing more awareness about how social determinants of health such as these affect individuals, Amirul highlights how there is, unfortunately, still a lot of finger-pointing at people who are obese.
It's a lot more complex than that. And while on the one hand, we Malaysians believe that we tend to spend a lot of time cycling, we spend a lot of time doing activities over the weekends, and I think that trend, we have seen an uptick in that particular trend where a lot of adults are conscious about their fitness and the time they spend on their fitness. For example, my wife, by hook or by crook, would wake up at 6 a.m. to try to run at the gym, which is something that I try very hard to incorporate into my own lifestyle. But it's also because our schedules are quite different. She works from home most days, so it's a bit easier for her to wake up early while I have to go to work. I have to start my commute pretty early in the morning. And it's not only a domino effect for most Malaysians, but it also affects Malaysians from a less privileged background even harder. And that, I think, is the conversation that we need to have about how we are going to make it easier for people who struggle to make ends meet, people who have to take up 2-3 different jobs, to also be conscious of their lifestyle while also being able to provide for themselves and their family members. I always believe that there's no such thing as a magic bullet. And I think that part of the discourse has to be not just about pointing fingers or placing blame at the individuals themselves who are struggling with obesity. It's not just about blaming certain parties, certain stakeholders. I think it's more of a more discussion should be placed on how different factors can be brought into making the lives of those who are susceptible to obesity and other NCDs such as diabetes a whole lot easier.
When I speak to people just in general, or I think most of us do, right, when we're talking about these kind of difficulties, there's like a predominant perspective that it happens because these individuals lack discipline. You know, they're not managing their diet, they're not managing their exercise, they're lazy. So there's a lot of shame and blame on the individual. People don't really understand how all these mental health issues can trigger or perpetuate a person's struggle with weight or with managing their diet and exercise. So there's a lot of lack of tact. People will make it seem like it's very easy. You should just cut down, you know, just cut down, just do this. And that can really trigger a lot of mental health difficulties and really erode the self-esteem of people trying to make these changes and trying to work on their weight.
That was Lavender Tan, a clinical psychologist. Obesity is a physical health issue. There's no denying that. But what we don't talk about as often is the psychological aspect, the mental health of people who are struggling with their weight and health issues. And this, as Lavender highlights, can be a vicious cycle.
Actually, the research does look into this quite a bit, and it does show quite a strong link between obesity and mental health struggles, particularly depression. So there's a two-way relationship with depression, and it's found to be very strong. But there's also a relationship between obesity and anxiety, and of course, obesity and eating disorders. The most commonly linked ones are binge eating disorder and bulimia nervosa. So with the cases that I work with, I do see a similar pattern. The individuals that I work with who struggle with their weight, they also often struggle with things like their self-esteem, their confidence, their self-worth, right? They could also be struggling with a lot of trauma, and this trauma could be separate trauma, or it could be trauma related to their weight. So things like comments, criticisms that they receive, and to a large extent also bullying that they receive throughout their lifespan that creates a lot of trauma in them. And there is also a component of emotional eating that I see in the clients that I work with. So what that means is that they are eating as a way to self-soothe and cope with their feelings, and they develop quite an unhealthy relationship with food. So it's hard to determine, you know, it's a chicken and egg situation, which came first.
Despite what he saw his father go through, throughout his own childhood and early adulthood, Amirul wasn't actively bothered about his own weight. So what changed?
It didn't bother me when I was younger. And it really didn't affect me in ways that I noticed.
Mm-hmm.
There are some things that I had selectively accepted as part of my life, which I have put aside. For example, anytime my friends go out and take part in marathons or any physical activities, I'll just be the social media bystander liking their posts. It's never occurred to me to even comprehend taking part in such physical activities, right? There's this selective ignorance that I've practiced as a young adult. But I did a routine checkup at a government clinic when I was 27. And that was when I was diagnosed with full-blown type 2 diabetes. Wow. And that's when I started to take notice. And I had to go through the whole different stages of denial, right? Like I didn't necessarily feel that I was sick. So being diagnosed with diabetes was something that I couldn't grasp at that particular moment. Soon enough after the diagnosis, then it started clicking to me. There would be some times that I couldn't do my usual 9-to-5. Like right after lunch, I would feel extremely lethargic. There would be times when my vision would be worryingly blurry. And all of that, when my doctor and I traced back, it could be traced all the way back from the diabetes.
Obesity is often a major health concern because of how it increases the risk of that individual having other chronic diseases. For example, it increases the risk of cardiovascular diseases such as heart disease and stroke, both of which are leading causes of death globally and in Malaysia. Obesity also increases the risk of diabetes, yet another serious public health issue, and that was eventually the wake-up call for Amirul.
Allow me to get morbid here for a bit, but being diagnosed with diabetes at 28,
mm-hmm.
it really has affected how I view my mortality. Yeah, especially as a young person living in KL, there is an assumption that you could do no wrong. That you're eating what other people are eating, you're doing what other people are doing, you're working the same hours that other people are working, and you think that there's no negative side effect there at all. But there is that, going back to the selective ignorance that I mentioned earlier, that is where and when I had to sit back and think and reflect on a lot of the choices that I've made, in particular in terms of my fitness, in terms of the sheer lack of time that I had set up to do something as simple as walking. You don't need to, there is no requirement for you to pay for a gym membership or to lift weights for 3 hours a day just to make sure that you are in good shape. All you have to do, all anyone has to do, is to go outside and walk for half an hour to 1 hour, and that'll be enough, right? But the fact that I didn't even try to accommodate that into my schedule, that has given me a lot of time to think. And in a nutshell, it really feels that after quite some time of reflection, that lifestyle-induced NCDs, such as diabetes, they are all, at the end of the day, lifestyle diseases, which means that the reason why you are getting sick, the reason why I got sick, was because my body was telling me, hey, your life is unbalanced in some, in a few critical ways. And instead of seeing that as a death sentence, it's a way for me, myself, and hopefully others as well, to recognize that this is the moment that leads to lifelong lifestyle changes and to live a more balanced life.
After the break, more on how Amirul set out to change his lifestyle habits, the mistakes he's made, and what he's learned along the way. This is NCD Chronicles, a series that takes you beyond the diagnosis of non-communicable diseases to understand the unique struggles and needs of the individuals behind the disease. Stay tuned to Health and Living, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, Lim Su Ann. You're listening to an episode of NCD Chronicles, a series that explores the NCD epidemic through the voices of people living with these chronic diseases. In this episode, you're hearing from Syed Amirul Ashraf on how he's lived with obesity since childhood and how being diagnosed with diabetes in his late 20s spurred him to start making small but sustainable changes in his life. Now, this required discipline to stick to what you planned, which Amirul found was particularly challenging for him.
The thing about instilling discipline in doing any of these activities, be it dieting, be it fasting, be it exercising, is that for the first few months, you really need to start actively thinking about it. And it has to not interfere with your existing daily routine. And I think that is the most difficult part of maintaining such a routine over long periods of time. Like, it's difficult for us to be rigid in a world that requires us to be extremely adaptive to certain situations. For example, traffic jams, commutes. You think that it's a non-factor in a discussion about obesity. But if your commute takes an hour to and from work each day, that's 2 hours that you can spend on more meaningful activities. You can spend the time cooking a decent, nutritious meal. It's time that you can spend exercising. And I think that 2 hours accumulate over weeks and months and years. And that is where I believe that the burden shouldn't 100% be placed solely on people who are already struggling with their weight.
That's something that clinical psychologist Lavender Tan also agrees with. So how do you make habits that stick? How do you make habits that last? We can start by understanding the psychological aspect to habit development.
And it's not just like weight or health-related habits, right? We are all struggling every day to improve our habits. There are two parts to habit development. So the first is the behavioral part, changing your behaviors. There's a lot of books out there, great research out there. A good one is Atomic Habits by James Clear. There are a lot of things that you can do to increase the likelihood of a habit sticking, such as starting small, right? Tagging it onto an existing habit. So for example, starting with doing 10 jumping jacks before you hop into the shower every day, and then slowly working up from there, making things easier for yourself, doing things you enjoy. So essentially the world is your oyster when it comes to developing habits. There's so much you can read on. But aside from the behavioral part, all these little tips, there's of course a huge component that is cognitive, right? Meaning your thoughts. That is so, so important when it comes to developing habits that stick. So the way that you speak to yourself when you're trying to make these changes can make a huge difference in encouraging yourself through the initial phase of building a habit, which is so difficult. That's the hardest part, right? So let's say if your inner dialogue is saying, oh, you have to do this, you're fat, you're disgusting, everybody hates you, stop being lazy, it's so cruel. It might work for a few days. You might get the initial jump start, or maybe even a few weeks, but eventually it will erode your self-esteem to the point where you just give up. I can't do this. I don't believe in myself, right? So the way that you speak to yourself impacts your ability to get back on the horse, because we're all going to hit bumps. Even with well-established habits, we might go through phases in our lives where we cannot do it, right? But when that happens, if you kick yourself when you're down, you call yourself names, you say, oh, you see, you're always like this, you can't stick to anything, you can never develop healthy habits, it makes it so much harder to get back on track, as opposed to if you're able to say, yeah, it's normal, you were busy, let's see how we can start small again, it's gonna hurt at first, right? So generally being able to think of the process from a lens of self-love instead of self-hatred. I want to fuel myself with nutritious food so that I have energy, vitality for my life, or I want to move, I want to explore the world, I want to feel good in my body, as opposed to I'm disgusting and I need to fix this, right? And of course, along those lines, kind of reframing, you know, changing your food and your exercise as something that is fun and exciting, right? Like getting excited, oh, what kind of food am I going to cook? How am I going to make it tasty? All the books, podcasts I'm going to listen to about exercise, nutrition, rather than, you know, thinking of it as a process of growth rather than a process of deprivation.
It takes time to see the impact from these habits. Doctors often emphasize that it will be a gradual, long-term process so that you don't do too much, too fast, and cause more harm to your body and your health instead. Sometimes, though, the lure of a quick fix can be pretty hard to resist.
Well, generally, a little bit of balance is ideal. So this form of thinking is something we call an unhealthy thought pattern. We label it all or nothing thinking, right? It's common. Very common. Our minds tend to do that. It tells us we have to go all out or it's not enough. It won't make an impact. So if some of the clients I work with, they will say like, okay, I started small. I started walking on the treadmill for 10 minutes, 15 minutes. And you know, that can be quite tough for somebody who is not used to it, especially if they have weight issues on their knees. But then to them, they will have thoughts like, why are you even bothering with this? This is not going to help you lose weight. There's no impact, right? And there's also a lot of saying out there. We're always told, do it right or don't do it at all. That's what people tell us, right? But that is such a flawed statement, because most of the time when we start something off, we're not going to be able to do it perfectly or completely right. So if we don't do it at all, will we ever get anywhere, right? We have to start somewhere. So it leads to habits that we can't sustain. At that time when we want to make a change, we feel a burst of motivation and we want to take on the most extreme measure so that we can get the fastest results, right? So partly, yes, natural to want things fast, but maybe a big part of it is also a lack of self-belief, right? We don't believe in ourselves in terms of being able to sustain this healthy lifestyle. We don't believe that we can make it part of our identity. So we think, you know what, let me just get this done while I still have this motivation.
So I felt guilty of trying a few fad diets whenever there's a new trend popping up. For example, there's a lot of talk about intermittent fasting. And this is my own fault. Like, I tend to, when I like what I'm doing, I tend to overshoot my routine to see if I can get more benefit out of it. So I tried intermittent fasting for a while when I went to my physician. The physician noted that I had lost weight. So then I started doing more and more extreme versions of intermittent fasting. So I, at one point, ended up having only taking one meal per day. And I tried taking up 36-hour fast.
Wow.
Which was something that I do not recommend anyone doing.
Amirul had gone all out to the point where he did see significant changes in his weight, but it came at a cost.
At first, I was losing weight fast, right? I lost 10, 15 kilos in a span of about 6 months, which is amazing. And I felt great, right? And what happened was, in addition to doing extreme intermittent fasting, I also incorporated quite a lot of fiber into my diet to make sure that I get full a lot easier and that my bowel movements are easily taken care of, right? So what happened was, my body adjusted to my diet in such an extreme way that when I stopped eating for long periods of time, two things happened. Number one, my bowel movements became a whole lot slower. And number two, to compensate for the lack of sugar in my bloodstream, my body began to burn basically my fat and also my muscle tissue. So it got to a point where my bowel movement just stopped altogether for about a week. And I went to a private clinic and the doctor asked me to take mineral oil to drink to help my stool to pass. And I kid you not, they did. We took an x-ray of my larger and lower intestines.
Mm-hmm.
And near my pelvic area, there was a stool the size of a tennis ball. And that was blocking everything else. And my muscles that would have been able to pass the stool bit by bit was atrophying because I wasn't eating, right? So I had to undergo surgery. And I spent a good 2 weeks in the hospital. The lesson here, I think, is to not take things to an extreme. And I think my mistake was to not disclose any of my more risky attempts to lose weight to my doctor. My doctor would have told me that I was crazy to not eat for 36 hours, right? It was one of those situations that was completely, completely avoidable had I been practicing a more balanced approach in losing weight.
Having a strong support system is an equally important part in this conversation about obesity. Knowing that there are family and friends who will be there to support and cheer you on, or perhaps even join you in making new habits, helps to make you feel less alone in this journey.
It can make a huge difference, you know, if you're able to feel loved and supported just for who you are to begin with, your self-esteem, your sense of psychological safety. With a lot of the people I work with, there's also, I don't know, like a fear of judgment, right? When they want to try something new to work on their health and their weight, they feel this sense of fear that, hey, if this doesn't work out this time, there's going to be a lot of comments. People are going to say, see, you know, you can't stick to anything. They feel very isolated in their efforts. They feel like they have to hide it. They feel like they have to do things alone. So if they're able to feel supported, they have company, they have people helping them out, it's a lot easier for them to sustain these healthy habits. But I do understand sometimes it is difficult to share. Potentially you grew up receiving harsh comments or very insensitive comments. It might hold you back. I will always say you don't have to share with everyone. You don't owe anybody an explanation. Start small. Maybe assess the people in your life. Look around, right? And see who has always been a psychologically safe person. So maybe you've never opened up to this person about your weight issues, but maybe you've talked to them about something small, like a tiff at work, and you feel like the way that they responded was very understanding. They really made an effort to listen to you, very compassionate. They don't throw suggestions at you, but at the same time, they offer help and support. Whoever you can find within your community who, you know, exhibits those traits, you can start there. You don't have to tell everyone. That's one thing. Another thing is you can take to the internet, actually, which is a good thing. One of the pros of the internet, and find community of people who are working on intuitive eating, working on mindful eating, looking for communities that are mentally healthy while also working on their physical health.
Community support plays a huge role in making sure that you are taken care of. And this is where I'm grateful to have access to friends who are health conscious, to have access to doctors and dietitians who have helped me out throughout my journey. And there will be times that I relapse. And to have people who can help keep me, to hold me accountable, number one. And number two, to provide consistent emotional and moral support. I think it's such great help, actually. And this is where I really believe that a sense of community and having a community that's more health conscious, it can really help you. It makes the decisions to change your lifestyle that much easier.
And at the end of the day, both Lavender and Amirul agree that all we need is just to be more empathetic.
We all come from different backgrounds and situations. And to a certain extent, those of us who don't struggle with our weight, we have certain privileges as well. So it's not fair to say that this person struggles with their weight because they are lazy or they can't stick to something. You know, there's so many other components of it that we have to empathize with and understand, or at the very least, not criticize and comment on.
Obesity, unfortunately, right, it's not something that we think a lot beyond what we see with our own eyes. Our society, unfortunately, places a lot of emphasis on being physically attractive, to be aesthetically pleasing. And that is something that we need to really have a very thorough conversation about. It's about why and how we as a society not inclusive enough in our thinking, and how and why we are very surface level in terms of valuing individuals and people in our communities. Just because the person is, let's say, heavier or larger or not as beautiful as what is presented as the normal standard of beauty on social media platforms, that doesn't mean that these people have any less inherent value than those who look good on social media, right? And it's part of a much larger conversation. But to keep it simple, I think it's about understanding that I'm not overweight. I'm not obese because I just like to eat and I am lazy and that I don't work out and I don't participate in activities that other people partake in. Part of being empathetic towards people who are obese and people who struggle with obesity is by understanding their circumstances and to understand that nobody wants to be obese, nobody chooses to be obese, right? And that have spent a lot of their energy in their time and a lot of their thought process would have been geared to being more aesthetically pleasing, for better or worse.
Mm-hmm.
And that is ultimately the conversation that all of us need to start having.
Right now, Amirul's glad he's learned from his mistakes along the way, and part of that is to be more forgiving towards himself.
I think that there are always ways for me to improve on my lifestyle as far as dietary restrictions are concerned. I think it's all about, people don't talk about this enough, it's that it's a lot easier to go all out than it is to have the discipline to do things in moderation. Doing things in moderation actually requires a whole lot of more discipline and restraint than just going all out, which was why I believe I tend to take things in a very binary manner. Either I eat all the time or I don't eat at all. Like, none of those require the discipline or the restraint, so to speak, that yields beneficial results. And I think I have accepted that it's a lifelong fight. It's going to be something that I have to be actively aware of and manage in the future. And it's about having the restraint and the discipline to not overdo things. And to, I think most of all, is to be more forgiving towards ourselves. This is something that people also don't talk enough. It's about forgiving yourself for not doing things well, not doing things the right way, or just not thinking about the things that we do. And I think once we are able to forgive ourselves, once I allow myself to accept that I've done a lot of stupid things in my journey, that things can start going in a more positive direction.
This has been NCD Chronicles, a series featuring the experiences and challenges of people living with non-communicable diseases. If you missed any part of the show or you want to catch up on previous episodes, you can search for NCD Chronicles on bfm.my or on our BFM app. I'm Lim Suan, and you've been listening to Health and Living on BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.